Gozu by Takashi Miike. I love this movie. It sort of goes through different sections. So at first, it kind of starts out as a Yakuza movie. And then it's kind of an Odyssey story, which is one of my favorite types of stories, the Odyssey story. And then it just kind of, once you've met this group of oddball characters, it just kind of becomes what it is, which is just this weird movie about this group of oddball characters. And there's a supernatural element to it, but it's not a supernatural story. And before I get into it more, a couple of things. First of all, correction to not last night, two nights ago's episode. So the last episode, The Great Yokai War, I talked about Repo, the Genetic Opera, which I finished. And turns out that I believe I had finished it before. I remember the ending, which is great. It's the opera tonight, and there's snow, and there's blood, and it's cool. Visually, it's very cool and stimulating. So, the actor who portrays Shiloh's father, Nathan, is not Anthony Michael Head. It's Anthony Stewart Head. But I always mix up his name and Anthony Michael Hall's name, so I know that I called him Anthony Michael Head on the last episode, which probably sounded like a joke to those of you who know who I'm talking about and who know your 80s actors. But it's not a joke. I actually thought that because I mix up their two names. So Anthony Michael Hall is the guy from The Breakfast Club. Anthony Stewart Head portrays Nathan in the film version of Repo, the Genetic Opera. I have no idea who portrayed it on stage. Could have been him. I don't think so, though. Anyway. So, back to Gozu. I hesitate to call this a surrealist film, even though to me it is a great example of surrealism. I was listening to a podcast with Phil Miner and... not Phil Miner. Is it Michael Miner? See, now I'm messing up names again. I know it was Phil Tippett, who I'm a fan of. And they were talking about Mad God. This was on the Postmortem podcast, Mick Garris' podcast. And Mick Garris, I apologize if this is inaccurate, but Mick Garris referred to Mad God as a work of surrealism, and there was some disagreement in the room. Phil Tippett said that it's not, I think it was Phil Tippett speaking, said that it was not surrealism, and he used what to me is a cliched example, but it's, you cut from the moon to an eyeball being sliced, Unchin Andalo, kind of like the textbook film surrealist work by Louis Buñuel and Salvador Dali. So he was saying that's surrealism. Mad God isn't surrealism. It's actually fairly straightforward. There's a plot that you can follow and so on. Now, I disagree. I watch Mad God and I see it as being highly surrealist. I watch Gozu, and I see it as a surrealist work. It is surreal, and it has this unique tone, which is something I'm obsessed with now, tone. I was always obsessed with it, but I never had a word for it. I always referred to it as the feel of a movie, but it's really the tone that I'm talking about. And with the dialogue, the characters, the way the quote-unquote story plays out. And there is a story here. It's also a missing person story. This character is supposed to transport this other character. There are two Yakuza guys, and he's this one character, the character who disappears, is losing his mind, and he's being transported somewhere, presumably to be killed, Yakuza style. and he ends up disappearing. And he's kind of the main character at first, and then it switches to this other guy, the guy who's transporting him. And this guy is now looking for him. He ends up at this inn with this creepy older couple. You find out that they're selling the woman's breast milk. You find out that they're not actually a couple. They're actually brother and sister. And to me, this is a work of surrealism. The whole movie is imbued with surrealism, right down to the dialogue. So the repetition, the way people refer to each other, what they're talking about. I'm not going to say it's all highly surreal, but there is, it is imbued with surrealism, and there is an element of surrealism to it. And Takashi Miike makes it work. I had a moment where I was kind of like, okay, let me step outside of myself. As I'm watching it, I'm thinking, let me step outside of myself and look at this. Is this, you know, people complain about things being weird just for weird's sake. I don't have a problem with it. Somebody could make that criticism of Gozu, but there is a reason for everything, and it all ties together nicely. It's a well-written movie. And of course, visually, I think it's amazing. And there is a reason for everything. It all ties together. It all makes sense within the weird logic of the movie. And I also noticed when I was pretty far into it, maybe like an hour into it, I noticed the long takes. I just thought, I love the way this movie is shot. You know, what is it? And I realized that a lot of it, there isn't a lot of cutting. It's the shots hold and the shots play out, which is something that I'm obsessed with, especially now when there seems to be too much cutting and everything. My mind just immediately jumps to Oppenheimer, where there was way too much cutting. And the Oppenheimer episode of this podcast has not dropped yet, even though I recorded it, like, it feels like months ago. So you'll hear me talking about it on there. Sorry to give that away, but yes, there will be an Oppenheimer episode of this podcast. Spoiler alert, I didn't like it very much. It was okay. I liked it for a while. I liked things about it. I liked parts of it, but it's just the editing was what really brought it down for me. And the editing in this movie is subtle and minimal and beautiful, and it really elevates it for me. So it has the inverse effect. The inverse of what happened with Oppenheimer. On the subject of Miike, or on the topic of Miike, I watched the anime version of Terraformars, which, or Terraformers, I never knew how to say it, but this, I believe, was first an anime before Miike made his live-action version of it. And it may have been a manga before that. So I've been getting into the anime version. I've watched some episodes. Watched some episodes last night. And it's fun. I really dig the live-action version. I prefer the live-action version, I believe. But it totally works as an anime. It works very well as an anime. It may even be better as an anime. It involves I know I've talked about it on the pod previously. It talks about a group of terraformers who are sent to Mars to colonize. First, this form of algae is sent there. Two life forms are initially sent to Mars. So this form of algae and cockroaches. So an insect that will regenerate on its own very quickly and in great numbers, very robustly. This life form will regenerate. Now, somehow these cockroaches mutate into these humanoid cockroaches that are violent and hostile towards the terraformers. And thus, we have the story of Terraformars. I should also explain that I have begun reading, or I've been reading, The Sluts by Dennis Cooper, which is a really, really interesting novel, both structurally and otherwise. I love the shifting narrator. It sort of reminds me of the Rules of Attraction. So the Brady Sinella's novel, in terms of the shifting narrator, the difference is we don't really, as the reader, I don't really know what's true and what isn't. So it's this idea of the unreliable narrator, but you actually have multiple narrators who may be only a few men. You don't really know who's writing, who's telling the truth, who's not. Now, with, you could say the same of the Rules of Attraction, but that's more about, both books I think are about perspective. But I think the Rules of Attraction is more about perception. So you have these young people, these college kids who are experiencing things and perceiving things in different ways. So what you're reading may be true to their perception, whereas it may not be objectively true, and there may be no such thing as objective truths. Maybe everything is a matter of perspective. So that's kind of the bigger, or a bigger theme of that novel. Whereas, so in other words, the characters in the Rules of Attraction are speaking their truth, if you choose to believe that, or maybe you choose to believe that they are lying and they're just choosing to see things the way they want to see them. The difference with the sluts is that you have people writing reviews on this website, some of which may be completely fabricated. So you have people who are intentionally spewing lies about an individual who may not even exist, or who may be a different individual, or it may be the individual themselves who is writing. It's kind of hard to talk about. So, and speaking of hard to talk about, I think it's good when something's hard to talk about, by the way. I was thinking this while watching Gozu. Like, if you try to describe that movie to someone, it may not sound like much, it may not sound very good to them, but when you watch it, when you sit down and you see it and you experience it, it makes sense. It has its own weird logic. And the same is sort of true of the sluts. I mean, I could give you sort of a rundown of the plot, in quotes, which is that this group of men on this gay chat site, it's actually not a chat site, it's an escort site. A thread emerges on this gay escort site about this mysterious character of Brad. Now, Brad could be this porn star or ex-porn star, Stevie Sext. Brad has this sugar daddy named Brian who writes on the site. Stevie writes on the site. Brad never writes on the site, but he's being written about. Stevie and Brad could be the same person. Brian could not even exist. The reader never really knows, but by the end of the first part of the novel, you do have some sort of truth. Now, I just thought of something else on a different topic, if I may jump to it. I was thinking about the idea of a deus ex machina, a character who exists outside of the plot or the story. Really, I think it's more the plot. I was thinking about this in terms of Repo the Genetic Opera, where I'm not sure if this is true of the stage version, but in the movie version, the deus ex machina is this character, Grave Robber, played by Terrence, I don't know how to pronounce his last name, Zudnich, who co-wrote the stage musical with Darren Smith, and he is given writing credit on the movie along with Darren Smith. There's no credited screenwriter on the movie. It's literally a filmed version of what happens on stage, and you can see that when watching it, but in a good way it works, and it seems to all be shot on Steadicams, which gives it this interesting woozy feel. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't entirely shot on Steadicam, but it seems to be largely shot on Steadicam. I've been listening to Radical Romantics by Fever Ray, and I want to read to you the description of the album from Apple Music, because I think that it's kind of interesting. Radical Romantics. Whether as Fever Ray or with her brother Olaf in The Knife, the Swedish electro-pop artist Karen Dreyer has always used alien-sounding music to evoke primitive human states. It isn't just Radical Romantic's metaphors that scan as sexual. The surrender of Shiver, the dominance and revenge fantasies have evened it out. It's the way their squishy synths and herky-jerky club beats conjure the messy ecstasy of our biological selves. And then there's Dreyer's voice, which through expert play acting and the miracle of modern technology creates a spectrum of characters from Temptress to Horror Show to Big Daddy and Little Girl. I've been reading New Millennium Boys by Alex Kazemi. I'm over 100 pages into it. Or I should say I'm over 100 pages in. I love it. I'm obsessed with it. I love the aesthetic. I love the references. I love the way Alex Kazemi uses words and creates this world, this teenage world of 1999. It is a period piece. It is dense with references. It is perhaps overly reverential, but I really enjoy that about it. I've also been watching, I think it's called The Wonderful Story of Henry Sugar, which is a new short from Wes Anderson, about 40 minutes long, available on Netflix, I believe as of today, Wednesday, September 27th, 2023, and I'm currently recording this at about 1:59, or at about 2 p.m. on Cape Cod, Massachusetts. I just went for a run, so I have the endorphins flowing, and I'm a little out of it, but it feels good. I got a lot of writing done. I feel great. So this short is really interesting. I like the way it's done. Stars Benedict Cumberbatch, Dev Patel, Richard Iowati, Ben Kingsley, and Ralph Fiennes, who starts it off playing Roald Dahl. It's based on a Roald Dahl story. And actually, my favorite part of it is the beginning with Ralph Fiennes as Roald Dahl. I love seeing him in his writing workshop. I used to be really into Roald Dahl when I was a kid. And I had this book, I think it was my version of James and the Giant Peach, where it had pictures of his actual writing workshop. It was like this little, what do you call it? Not a shack. Not a garage, just this little house off away from the main house where he lived. And he would go out there and spend his days writing. And I was just obsessed with that. I loved it. And I love that that's incorporated into this short. It makes me love it in some ways even more than Asteroid City. I think it's nice and it's kind of exciting that I get a Wes Anderson feature this year, 2023, with Asteroid City, and then I also get this short. And apparently there are two others on the way. I'm not sure how true that is. The last thing I wanted to mention is the subtitles in Gozu, which I thought were really interesting, and kind of reminded me of the way Inglourious Basterds is subtitled, where it attempts to capture the vernacular that the characters are using. And similar to the way Millennium Boys is spelled with a Z on the cover of the Alex Kazemi novel, you get words with Z's instead of S's, and you get Japanese words in the subtitles of Gozu. That's also true of Boys in the Hood. I just thought of that. But back to Gozu, it gives it this flavor and this authenticity, and it seems to be a real attempt at translation and also putting you in that world and also creating, it's an attempt to create the subtitles that accurately capture what the characters are saying.
This has been a production of Reptilian.